Hey, so it's the day before Juneteenth, so it's a hot week in New York City. I'm just here with Chong, friend of the pod. Chong, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I know this is not your favorite. You're more like a refrigerated kind of person, right?
Yes. Yes. I'm dying. I'm just miserable. I hate everything about the heat.
I was just at Costco and they have that walk-in produce section, you know, where you're like all the refrigerated. And I was like, you know, I could just hide behind the box of like salad greens and just cool off inside this refrigerated room for a while, you know.
It's awful. So nice. And it's only going to get worse. It's like a full week of this.
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know what you need? You need a house with a basement, a proper basement.
Maybe, I guess so.
Because the basement floor is always cool during the summer.
Yeah, that is true. Yep.
Yeah, well, there's a parking garage here where if you go down, like in a grocery store, you go down one level and it's like 15 degrees cooler. I just want to kind of like break in there right now. but it is a nice summer evening, and I don't know. I was thinking, I contacted both of you to talk about the life in the burbs and just sort of like, I don't know what was on my head, but it was more just like, I lately have been feeling a little bit, maybe like too down on the city, on living in the city. Right now, there's so much talk about urban doom loops and crime waves, and it seems like every day, Chong, there's some awful thing that happens. Someone got mowed down. Someone got fucking raped. Someone got attacked. And just like the urban pathologies are just like multiplying, and everyone's trying to leave. I know this is real. This is a real thing. I know a lot of people that are leaving and a lot of people that are refusing to take jobs in the city and stuff. And it just kind of made me wonder, like, maybe we could talk up, like, because I fundamentally don't want to leave the city. Yeah. I like, you know, and I just want to get gauged, like, kind of where Chong, where your head is at. And then Mike, you've brought up in the past that there's sort of like a necessary either economic or political or both project that, you know, to move past the suburbs because they're just not sustainable.
They're not sustainable in the sense that the infrastructure that's needed to maintain, you know, suburban living is incredibly expensive, and they're financed through bonds. And as soon as these bonds turn up, you know, you have to refinance them. And in order to refinance them, they just keep getting the suburbs larger and larger and larger. But there's a limit to its growth. So it's sort of like a Ponzi scheme, if that makes sense. And eventually the upkeep is just going to be too much. So if you, the example, I think, right now, and you're seeing it, I think, throughout America, throughout North America, like in Canada, Mississauga, I think it was, they had like some type of fiscal crisis. And it's exactly the dynamic I just highlighted, which is that you need that constant expansion.
Okay.
You know, coming back that, you know, as I was highlighting about the financing for these suburbs. So they're, you know, financed through bonds to build the necessary infrastructure for those spread out housing. And in order to basically, you know, continue maintenance for the infrastructure, you have to keep expanding the suburb. But there is a limit to how much expansion that you could do. And eventually, you know, all of this maintenance.
What's the logic to the expansion? Is it to like expand the property tax base or something? Or
expand the property tax base, right? Right. So it's sort of like a Ponzi scheme in a way, right? You expand the property tax base more and more and more. And then that way you can sustain getting more and more municipal bonds to build the infrastructure. But because people are so spread out, you know, the infrastructure that's needed to maintain, you know, electricity, water, sewage, all of this is going to be quite expensive.
Yeah.
Because there is a limited life to it, right? And also roads, you know, there's a limited amount of life. And, you know, the other problem with the US is cars, like they're getting really, really heavy. And, you know, the heavier the car, the more wear you're going to put on the road, right? So, for example, someone said, oh, look at this Roman road. It's lasted for like 6,000 years, and our roads can't even last for like 2 decades. And it's like, well, yeah, but, you know, Roman roads don't have 6,000-pound SUVs going back and forth every day, you know, thousands of them going back and forth every day. If they did, I'm pretty sure they'd be, you know, less than a decade, too.
Yeah, yeah. And there, I think there are definitely signs that those limits are being breached. Like, we're starting to have, I'm not aware of, like, what the municipal finance situation is, but, like, I know that there's, some of the HOA and property tax bills just keep going up and up.
Yeah.
And insurance, there's an insurance crisis now where, large swaths of, places like in Florida and certain places in California, like, people just can't get home insurance anymore. So that's a loan covenant, right, on your mortgage. So that's kind of a crisis, you know, but I keep hearing, like, in Florida, like, the real estate market is actually starting to crash there because the HOA and maintenance costs are just, like, too high and people want out.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, it's like higher than rent.
Well, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, the older a building is, the more repairs and everything else you're going to have to do. And because it's so spread out, you know, just imagine the amount of material, manpower that's going to be put in to, let's say, repair the functional sewers or the water system, right? With, like, rural living, you don't really have that. You have a septic tank, you know, for your sewage, and then you have a well to basically, most places, to extract, you know, water. Electricity, you know, you have basically electricity. That infrastructure is there, but rural living is, well, I'm assuming. I know for sewage, it's septic tanks. I think for water, there's no centralized delivery system. Could be wrong, though.
Though I think the appeal of the suburbs is just that you get a measurable amount of distance and privacy from other people, which is what people wanting to leave the cities are in search of. And Chong, do you think, like, the situation is actually any better in the city? You're so adept at, like, you know, pointing out some of the pathologies that are going on.
No, I mean, I think, well, if you look at the map, like the carbon footprint map of New York and its surroundings, we people who live in cities are basically subsidizing everyone else in terms of our environmental cost. Mm-hmm. If you just look, just Long Island, Westchester, anywhere upstate, it's like dark red in terms of the carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. Everyone with their own little air conditioners and their own little heating systems and the waste and the trash and especially the driving. It's like people outside the city look down, like you were saying, about the crime, about all the different pathologies. But I look at them and I'm saying, well, we're the tax base. We enable your lifestyle, yet you still look down on city living. So, So it really, like you said, it's just not sustainable for everyone to live in a suburb. And that's where you get NIMBYism. Right? People move out there because they want more space. They want a yard and a lawn, which we all know lawns are just bullshit. I am so anti-lawn. I can't think of any other symbol that's worse for nature, for society than an actual lawn. Like,
I'm just going to interrupt. People want lawns?
No, fuck no. I think they're horrible. I think they're horrifying. No,
but like you're saying, people, like, you know, I maintain the lawn at home.
Oh, okay.
It's not, I don't like doing that shit.
Right.
Like, if I could get away with not having a lawn,
right,
I would do it in a heartbeat.
Right.
I'm just saying, for me,
like,
personally.
Have natural plants, or but if we look at,
well, you, like, can't do that because if you, like, let the grass grow too long, you know, the municipality is going to come knocking at your door saying, "Hey, cut your grass."
Right. Exactly. But to me, the lawn is like a symbol of a lot of the things that's wrong with living in suburbia, because, you know, it's fake, it's artificial. There's rules and regulations about how you have to maintain it. Nobody actually uses their lawn. It's just a symbol. It's just like, look at me. I have my little piece of land now that I'm going to manicure, maintain, spend all weekend. You know, upstate where I grew up, we had neighbors across the street that this guy used to mow his lawn every single day. And clearly it's just, it's like, it gives you something to do. It's like, it's this purpose for some of these guys. They have nothing better to do. You know, just go out there, mow your lawn, you're spraying chemicals on it. It's this artificial green color. There's no wildlife. It, to me, there's just no point. So yeah, I'm very anti-lawn. And I think, look at some of these, like the Sunbelt states, they all have all these water restrictions. I mean, you shouldn't have a lawn. You shouldn't have a lawn. I'm over it.
Yeah, but like, are we giving, as the collective, right? Like in America, right. Like, are there actually viable urban alternatives these days? Or, you know, like, what's really, like, first of all, not everyone can live in New York City, and New York right. City itself is not all urban either. Mm-hmm. And New York City is the densest city in America. There's really not many comparable cities. So like, do people actually have, you know, like, okay, if someone tells me they're moving, like I was just talking to a neighbor who's leaving New York City and they're going to Madison, Wisconsin. He said, I'm moving to a different city. And I said, where are you going? And he's like, Madison, Wisconsin. I'm like, okay, when people tell me they're moving to a different place, like, oh, I'm moving to Austin, I'm moving to Raleigh, I'm moving to, you know, Denver. Like, are they really living in cities? Does that count on a global context as actually urban living, you know?
So this is the thing. There's a great YouTube channel. It's called Not Just Bikes. I'm not sure if you guys heard of it.
I think I have. Is it a Canadian guy?
Yeah, I think it's a Canadian guy who lived in like the Netherlands.
Yeah, to the Netherlands. Yeah, that's a great YouTube channel. Yeah.
Very good. And the thing that he says, the problem with American cities is the zoning codes, right? So if you look at suburbs, and even in America, you know, in Toronto, I know, you know, most of the zoning is you can only build single family homes, right? So even in the city of Toronto, you just have single family homes. And we're built on an infrastructure that really, really, really relies on cars. So that's why even a lot of our cities, like the worst example is Houston, right? Even if you're in Houston, it still feels like living in the burbs and you have to drive everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that you really, you know, that's one of the problems in the United States. We're too car dependent, and that goes hand in hand with suburbs. And don't get me wrong, I'm not, you know, I don't hate cars. I actually like driving, right? You know, sometimes to relax, you know, like once in a month or something, or if I need to, you know, think things through, I drive in the freeway for like half an hour and it, you know, clears my mind. I enjoy driving, right? But you don't want a society, I think, and America's like this, which is that everything you have to rely on driving, right? So that makes the congestion, that makes traffic, that makes everything even worse. And I think it would be nice if we had alternatives like you can walk, you can take public transit, and this could actually be better for dealing with congestion, but we just don't have that option in the States.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's a problem.
I wonder too, you know, ever since 2020, I've had a number of friends, acquaintances move, and I too wonder, like, where are these people going? And I don't mean that in the sense like, oh, New York is the best city on earth. Where possibly could they move? But I am kind of curious. And some end up in, you know, like nice New Jersey towns like Maplewood. I think that's like a big place where a lot of like ex kind of, you know, like ex New Yorkers move with their families. Yep. Right.
I have a few people out there. Yep.
Right. It's got, quote, great schools. Right. Mm-hmm. I know people that move to, like, I don't know, Great Neck, some small Westchester towns. And so I wonder, but one of them I know who's currently moving said, oh, I have to get a driver's license now, even though the town they're moving to does have a downtown area, but it's simply, you just can't do anything.
Yeah, you can't. I mean,
a single thing, like name it. What could you do? You can't even go mail a letter without getting in the car, loading up the car, driving a mile. And to me, it's just egregious. Like, I think.
So I actually, to validate your point, Chong, I actually do have some personal experience. So I did live in a while back, like with the families, Livingston.
Oh, okay.
And I basically New Jersey. And there was a time when I didn't have a license because I was, in the summers, I would spend time in, with the family in Livingston, but I was doing, graduate work, my master's in Toronto. And I will say, when you don't have a driver's license, the burbs feels like a prison.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
the bus stop would take about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes to walk to. And then to get to Newark from Livingston on bus would take about an hour. Whereas if you have a car, that is basically about a 30 minute drive.
Yeah.
Right. Or if you need to go to, New York City from Newark, then to the city, then that's basically another half an hour, or 20 minutes to half an hour, depending if you take the path or the direct train, a Penn station or, the path. But if you have a car, you could basically, it cuts down the trip dramatically. And I think that's kind of a problem in the States, which is, if you live in the suburbs, you need a car. If you don't have a car, and I didn't even have a job, there's no employment prospects. You can't really do anything.
You can't do anything.
For entertainment.
You can't see anybody. And okay. So you might say, well, let me walk place. Where?
You're not walking anywhere.
There are no sidewalks because of, A, zoning, B, weird rules like, it's a private, the homeowner's responsible for maintaining, blah, blah, blah. And also it's just sidewalks get in the way. That's it's very hostile. The suburbs are extremely hostile to anyone who's not driving because like cars are private. And everyone else who doesn't have one is a poor and they have to take the bus. So should we build a nice bus shelter? No, we'll make them stand out by a metal pole with a number on it. And that's what it's like if you're in the suburbs. You're out in the open. If you don't have a car, you're walking places on, dangerous sidewalks or even just like on the shoulder of the road. Mm-hmm. And it's just no way to live. And when you refer to it as a prison, I grew up in the suburbs. Until you turn 16, your parents are chauffeuring you. And I think like as a parent, just imagine your entire life for many years is just driving your children around to various places. It must be a nightmare. And I know like the friends of mine with kids who have moved, I think, it's great. The kids get their own bedrooms. They have a backyard. There are a lot of positive things, but do I want to become a professional chauffeur for the next 10 years? Hell no. I'd rather shoot myself. And I would. There's just no way. There's even this commercial. I don't know if you guys remember it. I, of course, since I'm like anti-car, I remember it. It was, I think, like a Volkswagen commercial. And it was, or maybe Subaru. But it was the parents looking back at a little baby in a car seat, then a little toddler, then a little girl in, I don't know, like a ballet outfit, then a soccer uniform, blah, blah, blah. And they look back and they say, oh, she grew up in the backseat of the car. And you're supposed to feel nostalgic. Like, yeah, that's true. And to me, I think like what a horrifying indictment of America is that your childhood took place being driven around in a single family automobile. Polluting, causing congestion, enriching oil companies. That's pretty sad.
Anyway. There was a... Oh, you know what? I just remembered. There was... I think the thing that really triggered me thinking about this was this photo of like... Oh. Who are the two Ohio... It was the two Ohio senators. And they're walking... And it was just like, I think it was like a Father's Day thing or whatever it was. But they posted a photo of them walking down the sidewalk. There was a sidewalk. And just saying, like, just taking a stroll with, my buddy, the senior senator or whatever. And it was this photo, and there was like, it was so perfect. There was like, I don't know what you would call that kind of, it was like a state route kind of road. And, like the kind that, would take, 12 minutes to cross. You'd have to, you know, like, and it's like dangerous, you know, and then yeah. there's a Shell station. They're under a Shell sign. And then I think there's like, you know, it's like a Panera and a Wendy's and a, mm-hmm. you know, I think there's a Dick's and there's a, it's like, it's this same damn landscape. I looked at it and I was like, there's no way you could tell where this was. Anywhere. Right. This could be anywhere in America. This could be Long Island. This could be Rockville, Maryland, where I'm from. Itself. This could be yep. fucking. Anywhere. Yeah, and they were in Ohio. This could be any town in upstate New York. They all look the same, and it's so just off. Like, there's just nothing to hold on to as a signifier of locality at all. Not even the businesses have, because everything has been subsumed by national chains. So it's the same set of stores. I think there was an Office Max or something like that, or a Staples, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? And then... no locality. There's no, you can't even talk about the architecture because there is no architecture. It's just, you know, just drop in template structures.
Right. And because it's built for cars. I mean, it's yeah. car centricity. And that photo kind of reminds me of that very famous one of, I think it's a Pennsylvania highway, but like when you get off to go to a gas station off of the interstate yeah. where it's got the McDonald's, you know, all these gas stations and, you know, asphalt, you would never be able to walk it. I mean, that to me is also a symbol. Those two photos, I think like this is what America is. It's just highways, cars, and beef, right? Highways, yeah. cars, and beef. Like yeah,
that photo was like a real life, you know, pop art painting, you know, yeah. that was like Andy Warhol come to life. And it was just nothing but signs of national chains and zero lookout. Like it could be any, literally any highway interchange. Yeah.
And that's who we are. Yeah. That's who we are and what we represent and what we've built for ourselves, because we've convinced people that cities are hellholes, that any minor inconvenience, any minor physical discomfort, like we were just bitching about the heat a second ago. Do you think people in the Sun Belt or people in these hot cities even notice? They literally remote start their vehicles in their garages, turn on the AC, get in, roll out, drive in their air-conditioned car to their work, go to their air-conditioned office, drive to the dry cleaners, whatever. I mean, they don't even notice.
Yeah.
So it is like we've built this fake environment just for people in single passenger SUVs to drive around all day. And every aspect of, well, maybe I'm exaggerating here a bit, but a lot of aspects of America's personalities, our legal system, policing has to do with cars and with urban sprawl, suburban sprawl, I would say.
Yeah, and it's bleak too, because it's like, I don't think, like, if you go out to Long Island, which is so suburb, it's so... Long Island to me is probably the worst place on earth.
It is.
I really hate Long Island. And I think one of the reasons, and I looked at like Google Maps or Google Earth or whatever with the satellite overlay, and there are like no parks. There's a lot of like green, you know, it is like technically like green in color, mm-hmm. but it's all like shrubs and maybe some like backyard trees, but there are trees, but there's no nature. Do you know what I mean? Like it's all just shrubbery and
it's all manicured basically.
It's not really nature. It's just plants. There's plants, you know?
And even like even the trees, like if you look at, I'm guessing it feels like one of the newer ones. If you go to Toronto, like some of the older ones, you know, neighborhoods, the ones that were established, I guess you could say before the 50s and 40s, after the baby boomer boom in Toronto, at least, you know, I lived there for a while. The High Park area, you know, you have trees that are, you know, next to the street on the front of the yard, and it does provide a much more feeling that a much more natural feeling than what you have in the suburb, which is you don't really have trees in the front of the yard. It's all clear in the front, and the trees are usually at the back. and the front, the lawns are all very manicured. I don't know if you get that sense. Like in some places, like the older neighborhoods, the trees are kind of in the front. It's more, you could say, dense. The road's a bit smaller, and usually they can kind of fit a one-way road. Whereas the suburbs, the roads are incredibly wide. The yards are incredibly long.
Yeah, but I mean, in any event, it's just like it's just ironic to me because, you know, Long Island is supposed to be sort of like a tranquil respite from the city, the concrete jungle. But like, there's no parks. The only greens, the only extended green space that you'll see in Long Island show up are country clubs.
Yeah.
So private country clubs are the only, they don't have public parks. And in the city, in New York City, if you cross the line into Queens, there's like huge swaths of green parks. If you go to like Forest Park in Queens, like it's, I mean, there's like literal old growth forest in the city.
Yeah. Alley Pond is also
Alley Pond. Yeah.
Park.
Yep.
Yep.
And it's like, look, it feels kind of wild. And then you go to the burbs and there's nothing. There's nothing. And it's just, there's a certain, like what you were saying before, like how it's hostile to life.
It is.
You know, when you're in a car, you feel you're protected, right? Like you're mobile, you're protected from the elements and stuff like that. But if anyone's ever had a breakdown, I had a breakdown once in not a mental one, an automotive one, and I was out in City of Industry in Southern California, and I felt so my car, it was a shitty electric, I was borrowing my friend's shitty electric car and it ran out of charge, right? Close. And so I had to scramble and find a charge. There's no charging infrastructure there at all. I had to scramble, and there was one outside of a GameStop. And it was, and this is like the really, this is like Gen 1 electric vehicle.
Oh, so it's like incredibly slow.
Incredible. Like I had 3 hours to kill, you know, and or something like that. So I had to walk from the GameStop across this giant fucking road. I had to like run like a deer, you know. And the only thing around was TGI Fridays. And I just sat at the TGI Fridays bar for 2 hours texting with friends, waiting for my car to charge. But that whole time, I'm stuck. And if you don't have wheels in a place like that, it's really hard just to get from one point to another. You feel like stranded. And I was thinking of that J.G. Ballard novel, Concrete Island. Have you ever heard of this novel? And it's a guy who gets into a car wreck and he finds himself stranded on one of those like concrete dividing, you know, those barriers, like those, I don't know, it's like underneath a bridge or something like that. It's like one of those dividing line things for the traffic, and he gets stuck there, and it's just like he's marooned on a desert island. he gets stuck there for like, you know, and the highway is just like an uncrossable river, and it felt like that. I was like, I can't. It's really hard for me to describe the feeling of helplessness when your car doesn't work, but it's really bad.
Yeah,
it's really scary. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah,
you know,
a lot of people. Miss work. I mean, I know in maybe not in New York City, but on a lot of job applications, they can't even ask you if you own a car because that's not fair. But they ask you if you have reliable transportation. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people miss work. You know, they miss court appearances. They lose custody of their kids because they can't get to court or they can't whatever. They miss medical appointments. I mean, car dependency just it ruins lives. Ruins lives when there's no other option. I mean, you can't work, you can't go to the doctor, you miss out on court. It's just so
you're disabled. You're functionally disabled.
You are. And the way these metal boxes, these 2 to 5 ton metal boxes are marketed towards people is freedom. Every car commercial is such a joke. It shows people in nature happily. Yeah. It shows people, you know, doing not wheelies, but donuts or something, right? Yeah. It shows people
They're happy. Always taking a kayak off the top. You know?
Yeah. But buddy, you're not doing that. You are. You just ran over a toddler in a parking lot. Like, that's what you just did, right?
Oh, Jesus.
Like, you're not going kayaking, right? You've got to get your muffler fixed or something and spend 4 hours stranded at Jiffy Lube or something.
Yeah.
It's not freedom at all. It's the total opposite. And I just can't wrap my mind around how Americans are just so, like, they have a psychosexual identification with their automobiles.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, look, let's not get carried away. I mean, driving is, I mean, it's a fun activity. And, you know, if I could be honest, I would prefer to drive than to fly, to be honest. At a greater distance.
Flying's terrible though. But flying's terrible. Come on. They've made it terrible too.
Sure. Right? But I'm just saying, like, you know, driving's not all bad, right? Like, yeah, congestion is terrible. And what is it? Like, you could say a lot about the maintenance of the road and also the fact that everyone in the States gets an SUV, even though you really don't need an SUV, right? Like, it's, I mean, that's a topic in of itself. But I do think there is something in the sense that, you know, when this started in the 50s and 60s, you know, having a car did represent freedom, right? Especially if you come out of the wartime of Second World War with the rations and also the Great Depression. So, you know, having this car, moving to the suburbs, you know, having all of this, it does represent that. But it's also during that time, it was, you know, unparalleled expansion of economic activity.
Yep.
So, you know, a lot of money, and cars were relatively cheap and affordable. And that's not the case today. You know, today, and the average transaction price for a new car is about 40-something grand, I think.
That's just
$48,000.
Yeah, $48,000. Like, that's insane. It's unaffordable. And then if you buy used, you know, I think if you buy used, the interest rates will get you. The interest rates is a few percentage higher. If you buy new, if you have really good credit, it'll probably be about 6 to 7, I think, right now. Or a few months ago, if you buy used, it's at least going to be 10, you know, same credit score, right? So, you know, you're screwed either way. And even the cheapest car, the Mitsubishi Mirage, and it's a fucking terrible, terrible car. Like, it sucks. It's like, you know, it's probably like 10 years old at least. The interior is poorly designed, terrible quality. And that's like a $17,000 car.
Wow. Yeah.
I do think that there is something to this idea of like having a personal identification with the car. I put out a pod last week about how I wasn't even a fender bender. My wheel touched someone else's wheel.
Oh, Jesus.
And the guy acted like I killed his dog.
Yep.
And there was no damage. But he was so aggro and he was threatening me physically. Like, he said he was gonna kick my ass. And I was like feeling like it's almost like I hurt his child.
Yeah.
And it was this giant, you know, it was a Suburban or something, you know.
I was listening to that pod, and then it's like you got up to him and then he was like, "Do you want to fight me?" It's like, "No, we need to exchange insurance information."
Yeah, it was super touchy.
He a TLC driver? Was the license plate a TLC car?
I was in DC. No, and I don't think so. I think it was it was just a guy that was attending the same graduation ceremony that I was attending, you know. And
wait, you said a Suburban, right? So those really large SUVs.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. They do say that SUV drivers, like the larger ones, they tend to generally be assholes.
This guy was a real asshole, and I just thought it felt he was acting like I had intentionally hurt his dog or child, and I was like, dude, it's just your wheel. It's not even the body of your car. It was your tire and the damage, you know.
But, you know, you basically did hurt an extension of himself.
Exactly. That's what it felt like.
People believe their cars are themselves. You know, every aspect of it is, I mean, not only is it because they spent so much money on it, but they just identify. And I guarantee you, if there's ever a video, and there has been, but if there's ever a video of a guy walking across the street and say the driver hits him or kind of like, you know, pulls forward and the guy lightly taps the hood. If that driver were to slam into the guy and kill him, I would guarantee at least 80% of people would say that's justified. And you think I'm exaggerating, but that's how people are. Don't touch my car. I don't understand how you can. I mean, it's just a metal box that gets you from point A to point B. It's just a means of transport, of which there are a dozen others. But people believe, you know, this is me. This is who I am. And it's not just men, it's women too. Like, I've been called names. I've been treated very aggressively, both as a pedestrian and as someone who bikes. And it is, I mean, other countries aren't like this. I mean, yes, there's road rage. Yes, there's crashes. Yes, there's all sorts. There's drunk driving's very high in a lot of places. But they don't have this psychopathic aggressiveness when they're behind the wheel. I think that's something that's very unique to Americans.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, though, Chong,
yes.
I think there's just psychopathic aggressiveness in American life in general these days, I think.
No, but I do think, I am convinced that the car culture has something to do with it. I'm trying to decode, like, what's going on, but I do feel that there is a certain, this is an interesting conversation, because the three of us live in New York City. You're like right across the river, Mike. Mm-hmm. But although it's a massive city, like, we're in the minority, I think, when it comes to American experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think, right?
Yeah.
And when I leave and I go spend time in the suburbs of some, you know, some other place, I'm starting to feel, because I've been here half my life now, and I'm starting to feel a certain culture shock. It's like very mild, but it's just it is kind of like disturbing to me a little bit. And because I even feel it vis-a-vis my own family sometimes, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but I do feel there's a certain social something going on, like a certain sort of social pathology going on with people.
I guess you could say maybe social isolation. I mean, you know, you could go on living for quite a while without.
There definitely is. I would say that I don't have enough data to back this up, right? I only have like the data points that I personally know. So this is why I'm like maybe like trying to bounce this off you both, is that I feel like the suburbanites tend to be a little bit more hostile and uncharitable when it comes to how they talk about their neighbors and other people. and I would say they often really don't like where they live. Like my friends are often complaining about how they don't like other people around them. they're not hiding it. They're just, but I don't know if they quite attribute that to the suburban landscape and, you know, the lifestyle there. But a lot of people have said to me, like, you know, this place has really gone down to shit. And I was like, it looks beautiful, though. You know, I mean, it looks like it's thriving and, you know, all the shops are nice and stuff. And they're like, oh, but the people, you know, and well, they just speak very charitably about other people. And I don't know if that's a suburban thing. I don't know if y'all have seen that.
I think it's just, you know, this. I always go back to the socioeconomic pressures. And I think people just, there's a lot more pressure in America socioeconomically. And I think that.
But there's pressure in the city too. And
with suburban living, that becomes amplified. And then the pathologies, you could say maybe it's just, you know, antisocial attitudes. Whereas a city, maybe you could just say it's just more petty crime. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on this, so don't take my word for it.
So when you say like socioeconomic pressures, so beyond everyone, you know, we're all struggling, right? Everyone has to pay rent. You know, they have a mortgage, right?
Yeah.
They're paying a car. You might have an older car, but you also have to pay your Metro card, whatever, like, right, transportation. I mean, I wonder if it's because, like, I guess I can only speak for myself and my cohort. Like I was in academia, or I am. So people of my same, I don't know, people who I went to grad school with, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat. We have the same types of jobs. So like, yeah, we will go to each other's apartments and, you know, maybe have a drink, or we'll meet each other out. But like, we don't compete in terms of like where we live, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't talk to them at length about my home renovations. That wouldn't mm-hmm. even come up, right? Like yeah. we don't really talk about where we live. We're more talking about things we're into, or going out, theater, books, right? So I just wonder if people in the suburbs, I don't know, doesn't it feel like everyone's constantly remodeling? Like, isn't that yeah. what they do?
Yeah.
So I just wonder, like, you know, you go and you compare houses with people, right? Like if you have kids, your friends, you know, like that was kind of a major theme in a lot of like sitcoms and television shows about the suburbs, right? It's like people looking through each other's stuff and seeing, oh, they have a bigger, they have a pool and they're adding a deck and stuff. Like, I wonder if that is something, like, to me, it's just so foreign. Like if I go to a colleague's apartment, I don't even, it just doesn't register as like competing or caring about their living situation. I don't know.
No, that makes sense.
You mean they're keeping up with the Joneses?
Yeah, exactly.
But there is there is that competitive aspect, but I think there's also just, this is just what we do. And I remember I was out in LA, which I think of as, Angelenos think of it as just a giant suburb with no city surround, you know, it's right. just endless suburb. And so I think of it as suburban. And so I'm hanging out. My friend took me to this guy's house for a little house party that he was having, you know, like a family gathering, you know, just very whatever. And it was funny because he was, I call him like sort of like my West Coast doppelganger, because his name, I won't say his name, but it rhymes exactly with mine, and he has a very similar job, and we kind of look alike, you know. I was like, oh, this guy would be me if I, you know, grew up, it was in Southern California. And so I go to his house, and houses are very expensive, and so he's very proud of the house, and he just bought it.
Yeah.
And he you know, he's very nice, just very nice guy. And, you know, he's like, you a Scotch man? I'm like, I'm a Scotch man, sure. He gives me a Scotch. And, you know. And we proceed. It's like three or four. It was like four dudes, right? The fathers of the party and me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're like, hey, welcome to L.A. Welcome to my home. And then for the next, I think about an hour and a half, we were talking about his floors. Because they were saying, hey, this, you know, really nice house, man, you know, really congrats on the house. He's like, I don't like the floors. And they're like, what do you mean? And it was like, I don't know. And I looked at the floors. I said, your floors look fine. They're just like regular, these hardwood floors. He's like, I don't like the color. He was like, they're not exactly what the builder had specced out. And I'm just not happy with it. And I think I'm actually going to go to the builder and ask them to change them.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, I see. I mean, if it was a different color or something, you know, he was like, no, I think they're the same. It doesn't look like I want it to, you know? And I was like, okay, I don't mind talking about this, but it went on for like 90 minutes, you know? I'm in the Twilight Zone right now.
See, that's what I'm saying. They talk at length about home renovations. Like, I don't even care about my floors. I'm not saying my apartment looks like shit. You know, I like to decorate. I like nice stuff, but 90 minutes of describing.
But to be fair, both of you guys rent, right?
I've owned.
You've owned.
Yeah, yes. No, I am renting. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, well, you're renting right now.
Yeah,
that guy spent probably, I mean, he's probably has a huge mortgage, probably tens of thousands.
But why would you want to add on to it by changing the floors if they're fine?
Because he's already made that massive investment.
I don't know.
And then he's getting that unsatisfaction, a little bit more money.
From floors, from the color? It wasn't even structural or termites or something. I don't know.
Hey, if you paid like $2 or $3 million for it, I'm pretty sure that's probably affecting the psychology. My personal opinion.
I'm sure it is, but I mean, whatever's affecting it, it's weird to sit around and talk about floors for that long.
It is.
It's just weird. And I just I thought that this was a way for us to just sort of like ease into like, hey, let's talk about my floors and then we can move on to, I don't know, sports or something. And then we can talk about careers and then we can keep drinking and then we can move on to politics or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever, you know, like we'll just keep moving on, you know, but we didn't. It was just like, I don't know, man. I think I really got to call them and just be like, I really don't think that these floors are what I was expecting. And I was like, yeah. And then I just another swig and I was like, hey, this is so weird. I don't know. It's so weird. Yeah. And then the ladies were talking about streaming.
Oh.
And okay. I was just I don't know. I know this sounds really prosaic and whatever, but it kind of was a bit of a culture shock for me.
Yeah.
About like just honestly like how see, I don't mind speculating here because I haven't divulged who these people are. I kind of feel like there's a certain suburban desperation or urgency where I feel like they're worried that they're about to be bored to death or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but they always seem to be fighting off boredom and frustration. And
well, I mean, look, not everyone who lives in the suburbs like left from the city, right? Like I know a lot of people that have, but I think that particularly for those people, they've invested so much in moving there. So they have to make it worth their while, right? They have to not have a regret about living some other kind of lifestyle. Like I could list the number of things that are wrong with my life right now in terms of living in a city. I could list them out, but like, I just wouldn't. I wouldn't. And I know that if I moved to the suburbs, I would die a slow death. I would. And that's not to insult anyone that chooses that lifestyle. I just know it's not for me. So
well, Chung, you see, this is why like lawns become so important. Like, you know, your neighbor, like you talking about manicuring his lawn.
Oh, God, without every it. Every fucking day. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you're right. To do. Yeah.
But I do think that there, I mean, my feeling is that it, you know, it's, there's like a sort of like cultural doom loop going out in the suburbs where, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think it's any one particular person's fault at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think the environment is acting upon them in such a way that it's like getting harder and harder for people to like extend their net, like their social.
Oh yeah, it's very hard to do that
beyond, you know, or it's hard to extend even just your like personal sense of self, like beyond your property,
your
or
home,
something.
Right?
Your home. Home, yeah. And you know, they don't like they don't seem particularly attached to any part of where they live, you know, and they don't seem to be particularly fond of the people around them. And that's, you know, if you repeat that writ large across this whole swath of geography, like it just sort of doom loops because people just everyone there becomes like a, you know, everyone sort of repels everyone else, you know, and they just all become like positive charges or negative charges, you know, and they're just all seem to be repelling each other, you know, and
yeah, they stick to their little plot of land and they just got to maintain it properly.
Yeah.
So property value doesn't go down. That's, you know, the ultimate thing with suburbs. But I do want to say something about the antisocial aspect. You know, I also, when I was a kid, I lived in Toronto and I lived in one of those old, you know, old timey neighborhoods where they actually do have multifamily homes rather than single family homes. And you know, I guess maybe I was kind of sort of the last generation. I don't know. Like, you've never had this, right? Like, growing up, you know, some of the neighborhood kids would just come together and they played street hockey on the street.
We did that all the time.
Okay. Yeah.
We did that all the time.
We didn't play hockey, but yeah, no. I did live in that type of suburb.
Okay.
Yeah, we played roller. We played what are those called? The rollerblade hockey.
Yeah.
You know, when we moved to Livingston, that just did not seem like something we could do in you know, a suburb of Livingston. Or maybe it's just the changing of the times. You know, just, you know, as time goes by, this becomes less and less possible. I don't know. It's just not very conducive. Suburbs are not very conducive for social interaction.
Right. Yeah.
I think they've gotten worse. Have they gotten worse, do you think? Because my personal recollection of growing up in the burbs is not as awful as it feels today. And I don't know if that's... And my friends who have grew up there with me and now are living in the same suburbs are also seems to have changed their outlook on it. And I'm always coming back and saying, oh, what a great place this was. And they're like, yeah, it's changed.
Yeah, it has changed. I mean, even just thinking of trick-or-treating, I mean, we went out in hordes. Hordes of us went out together. And now I don't think my family says that they don't get any anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of things have changed. I think a lot of it, cars, sprawl, you know, there's more cars on the road. You can't let kids ride their bikes anymore. Yeah. So all those memes of boomers, oh, well, kids these days, they don't ride their bikes. They don't play. Well, that's because you built it so they can't.
Oh, I would not. If I had a kid, I would not let him ride a bike in 4 weeks.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, because they can't. Right. Right.
Not just that they can't. It's fucking dangerous.
Well, yeah. Right. That's what I mean. There's just no bike lanes. People drive like psychos, bigger, heavier cars. Totally. But yeah, I do think... you know, raising kids, I don't know. I feel like in a rural area, I don't know, say you live at the foot of a mountain, you've got animals, you can teach them stuff. That to me would be fine. City obviously is fine. I think the worst would be like not one of those nice suburbs with, like Mike, you were saying, like 2 and 3 family homes where there's a lot of kids, but in an isolating suburb, it just has to be horrible.
Yeah, and I think homogenous ones, right?
Right. Like that's, yep.
You know, and the only sort of, there's not really a downtown. There's just strip malls, miles on end.
Right. Cause where are these spaces? I mean, you don't see people. I think for my version of the culture shock is whenever I go back upstate is just, you don't see anyone. You could go for days and just not think about it. You do not encounter another person and you don't even talk to someone else unless it's through a drive-through. Mm-hmm. And even then it could be AI. I mean, think about it. Oh, that, geez. Yeah. That suburban life is like, you don't talk to people. Like right now, I might even do it later. I could walk out my front door with my dog, talk to maybe 10 different people. I mean, there's just a difference. It's like cities force people. I mean, yes, there's a different type of loneliness, right? Right. There's, you know, all the French 19th century poets talked about it, like being lonely in a big city. But still, it's just how to me, it's if you already take
well, the a proximity to people sometimes generates the necessity for interactions, whereas you just don't even have that in the suburbs.
Yeah, you don't need to.
It's complete loneliness in a sense.
It's also, I found it's also that when, like, for example, like where I live in Elmhurst, like there's like a community Facebook thing that my wife goes on a lot. And because it's so small and you realize like everyone's having very similar experiences and people ask questions that are really interesting because you're like, oh yeah, I actually was wondering that. Like, what is that building? What is going on in that block? You know, like, and there's like a lot of people thinking about the same little area and people are nosy and they're very interested in everything. And there's a neighborhood, there's just a certain sort of like commonality to this place that I don't know quite exists in the, here's the thing. What Chong, you were saying about, you know, it'd be one thing if you were literally growing up in sort of like the bucolic countryside. And then the other is if you're growing up in a vibrant city. And I, you know, this is a principle that I keep coming back to. Like, I just keep seeing this play out in all different contexts is when you try to get the both of both worlds, but best of both worlds, you end up with the worst of both. You know, you think you're going to get the best of both, but what you end up is with is the like the downside of both and the upside of neither.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like the Burbs, I don't know, at some point when they were shiny and new, must have felt like the best of both worlds. But I think it's starting to become, in my opinion, the worst, where you have the congestion and gridlock and just sort of the concrete jungle feeling is absolutely everywhere in the Burbs now, right?
Parking lots. Endless.
Yeah, I sent you guys both the little X script, right? X script that picture of SimCity.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, the game SimCity, they said that, well, if we're going to use, like, you know, zoning code, like, you know, obviously we can't use American zoning codes for SimCity, because if we did, you would basically be building parking lots.
Yeah.
In the game. You would be building mostly nothing but parking lots.
That's Westbury, Long Island. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how many
parking Everything's lots a parking lot because it's written into any of the...
it's written into building, the zoning laws.
Yeah, the building and zoning codes is that you and often it's a ridiculously excessive amount. It's not even like, okay, 50 people, 50 spaces. It's like, well, you have to. So yeah, you're right. The suburbs are even sometimes counterintuitively, they feel even more concrete because it's as far as the eye can see as opposed to up.
It's just roads, and more roads.
There's just literally no charm.
Roads and parking lots. And if there is a little park, it's some ridiculous park that no one would actually sit in.
Yeah.
You know, those fake parks with a couple of benches named after the town supervisor or something. And, you know, like a brand new tree and they're ugly. So, yeah, like, again, I always say I'd either want to be in the middle of nowhere, you know, snowy, you know, next to some fresh water, whatever, or in a city. I just think I would die a slow death.
Yeah. I am starting to feel definitely that as time goes on and I've become too acculturated to living here. This weird feeling I get when I go to the Burbs, and I'm still trying to describe it. I can't really, but it feels like they're just meaner. I don't, they're just meaner. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to put it. Like there's just a certain like mean cranky quality to the Burbs and the city has such this, there's such a stereotype about New York being this hostile, you know, everyone's rude and, you know, and maybe I get what they're saying, but like there is a certain sociability to people in the city that I just don't see. Like people are awkward in the Burbs and they're like a little bit weird about interactions. And I just feel like I'm in a different, it feels both extremely familiar and then also disturbingly foreign at the same time. And it and this feeling I've gotten has become more acute in the past several years. And I don't think it's just me. I think that the Burbs have gotten worse. Mm-hmm. And it might be the pressures that you're talking about where you know, the financial pressures and the social pressures are, especially of raising kids and stuff, it's getting jacked up more, and it's coming out in weird ways. And I don't know, I don't think it's me.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's either. Yeah.
Well, I think it's also just the deteriorating material conditions, right? I mean, I don't go back to China often, but when I went back and I see the material developments and wellness, I think Chinese people have gotten, this is my personal opinion and experience, they've gotten nicer as they've gotten more developed and richer. And I think you're seeing the inverse of that in the U.S. as living standards. And we know that living standards have kind of imploded.
Yeah, I think they've gone, you know, you're right. I think they've gone into like a sort of scarcity mindset.
Yeah.
And
I think suburbs makes it even worse because like you're not constantly around people and you just really think about yourself. So it's, you know, in the city like New York, like, yeah, everyone's got their business and they're busy. But there's not an explicit viciousness. It's like, hey, buddy, I'm just busy, right? Like, I got my own thing to do. Whereas in the suburb, it's like, well, there's not really a necessity to be an ass. And sometimes if you get into the wrong side, it just kind of is, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, they're just, yeah, it's just like this.
Like, if you bumped into that guy, the car stuff in New York, it would be much more businesslike. I'm guessing.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of car assholes in New York City.
Cars are a different story. But
yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe another example. But yeah, I mean, people, you know, I think if you look at like people's commute time, right? People move out of the city or, you know, whatever. They get jobs in a certain place. Commute times have risen so much.
Oh yeah.
Over the past, I don't know, 10, 20 years. So people are spending even more time away from their families because they have to drive everywhere. And I think that adds to the problem in the suburbs.
And I can tell you, like, if I'm stuck in traffic, yeah, like it is not a fun experience.
Of course.
And I, you know,
it's immiserating. And then people bring that home. So I think that adds to like why people in the suburbs have gotten worse mentally, like their mental health is worse, is the urban sprawl the suburban sprawl. They've had to move further and further. They're paying more and getting less house. You know, they're getting less home. Their commutes are even longer. The schools, you know, the way schools are funded has always been really messed up. So their kids might be on a bus for a long time. I mean, it's just terrible. It really is.
Yeah, and I think there's a feedback loop because as people become more like pissed off or whatever it is, like their mood deteriorates, and this is happening to everyone at the same time, like the feeling gets like being out in public feels worse.
Yeah.
You know, and you get more, I think you just get a little bit more scared of other people.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
I mean, look at, you mentioned Facebook for the urban. I mean, look at Nextdoor. I mean, that whole, I mean, I've browsed through it. That whole website is for snitching on your neighbors and being suspicious of, oh, I saw a guy, you know, turns out to be like the paper boy or something. And you see that dude in upstate New York who murdered someone because she drove in his driveway by accident or knocked on the door by accident.
Yep.
I mean, people in the suburbs are paranoid. They're paranoid. They're not around people. They have all the problems we just mentioned, the financial pressures, their cars don't work, jobs, you know, everything. You compound this. Like, yeah, if you're in the city, at least you have other people. You've got a bodega cat you can pet. You know, you've got, you know, little kids crossing the street, very cute. You can see people. If you're in the suburbs and you're feeling this way, what do you have? Nothing.
Yeah.
You have nothing.
Yeah. Yep. And and it compounds, you know, it just compounds. Yeah. And I feel like I was exempted from this growing up because Mike, like you said, like, you know, things were on the up and up in the 80s and 90s. And I would say, though, by the mid 90s, people were there was starting to be this questioning of the suburbs as a place to just have your soul get crushed.
Well, I mean,
it was starting to happen. Like, that was seeping into the culture by the 90s.
I was pretty young, but I feel like that is what some of the movies like American Beauty or like Fight Club kind of represents that type of aesthetic questioning of that, you know, of the suburban living, right?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Or at least that's how I feel.
Yeah, and like, you know, like a Reality Bites type, that whole, when Gen X were in their 20s and stuff, they were, you know, they were so over the burbs, you know, like, and then there was this depressive quality to the culture and everyone was listening to fucking Radiohead.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was just, There was a sense that I feel like the suburbs were alive for a while, mm-hmm. you know, like in the John Hughes era, where being in the suburbs was a great thing, you know, and then maybe because the conditions were worsening or something, or maybe like the optimism was starting to fade, you know, and we were peaking, and then you got the American Beauty effect.
This is the end of part one of a two-part podcast. The second part will be on our Patreon feed for Patreon subscribers. If you want to support Plan A, go to patreon.com/planamag.